change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is the Nonprofit Snapcast. Thank you for joining us today. My guest for today is Peter Clay. Peter is the principal of CyberOps. Peter, how are you doing?
Just fine, Mickey. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. What is CyberOps?
CyberOps is a managed security service that brings enterprise capabilities to small, mid-size, and nonprofit businesses and organizations around cybersecurity. So if you've ever wondered why big companies don't get hit by ransomware, we've run big companies' security programs. We know that answer, and so we're bringing that to the little guy as well.
So I'm going to play, you know, the foil here, either the devil's advocate foil or the I just don't know any better foil. Do nonprofits really need cybersecurity?
Oh my goodness. we're living in a world where a hard drive, because of the data on it, can have more value than a ton of gold. And so when you think about the information that your business collects around financial information, personally identifiable information, medical information, all of those sorts of things, all of those things have value if somebody gets hold of them and sells them.
Right.
They also have a tremendously damaging value to the organization that loses them. And so cybersecurity is quickly becoming one of the cornerstones of any organization's business and business processes.
So you're talking about everything. You're talking about donor records. You're talking about mission recipients. You're talking about any person that a nonprofit touches in the course of a day.
But it goes even beyond that stuff because so many nonprofits help out with medical issues, sure. Right? And the value of a single medical record with the name, social security number, you know, home address and mother's maiden name or something like that is over $1,000 if it's sold on the black market. So when you start to think about the fact that, you know, a lot of nonprofits, even in talking to like some of the local folks around me, some of the nonprofit clinics around here have tens of thousands of medical records that are electronic and maybe not stored as securely as they need to be. And when you go back and you always go back to the Willie Sutton rule, right? The bank robber mm-hmm. in the 1930s. Why did you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Why do people right. hack systems? That's where the money is.
Well, what kind of sick monster would target a nonprofit that's trying to make the world better?
Well, again, the profit motive tends to drive some ethics to the edge and to the core, right? And also, right. it's really important to remember something. Attacks these days are very seldom we're going to go after that guy. What they right. do is they set the attack up to scan. You know, when I started in cybersecurity, it would have taken me years to scan all of the internet, all of the available internet, even though it was probably 1% of the size that it is today, right? I've been doing this for 25 years. Right. Today, I can scan everything that's visible on the internet in about 45 minutes. And so what an attacker does is they don't go, I'm going after that nonprofit. They go, I'm going after this kind of vulnerability across the entire internet. And then I'll see who I hit. I'll figure out what data they have and I'll work it from there. So it's not going after nonprofits. It just, if you don't have a good front door lock, you're really putting yourself at risk.
Right. Because those people are just being opportunistic.
Sure.
So what can we do? How can a nonprofit, which typically doesn't have a huge budget for this kind of thing, I mean, nonprofits, many of them already wrestle with technological infrastructure. How do you do cybersecurity on a budget?
So the first advice we always give to people before you start buying technology, before you start configuring stuff and worrying and getting all sorts of people involved, is think about putting yourself on a data diet, right? Hmm. If you don't have information that's of value, typically you've just reduced your risk exposure by probably more than any single thing else that you can do, right? I call it the Mr. Miyagi rule from the Karate Kid. The rule was, you know, it's hard to get hit if you aren't there. If you don't have the data, it's hard to lose that data. right? And so thinking about it before you get all sorts of folks involved, what data do I actually need to be able to do, to run my nonprofit and to do my business? Okay. And then the second piece of it is, do I need to store that data everywhere, or do I need to just put it in a couple of places where I can really do some targeted spending to really protect that location with some encryption and those sorts of things? It doesn't Right. have to be hard. It just has to be a little bit disciplined.
And you're not talking about a specific hard drive. You might be talking about one specific remote location with one front door on it that multiple people can access.
There's some really good stuff out there today that will kind of do all of this stuff for you and make it so that you don't have to even think about it, right? There are a couple now, one of the fastest growing areas of cybersecurity. People have heard of Signal. Elon Musk just touted Signal. You have to have Signal. Of course, he's an investor in it, so it helps him out the more people that join it. But there's a lot of encrypted storage areas and things like that are willing to work with nonprofits to allow them just to store fairly large amounts of data for little or no cost. And it really isn't any more difficult. You can even use your Box or you know, your Dropbox or Box account and store it in an encrypted format and then just be able to use it just like you always have. So it, right. again, it's just not all that complicated. It just takes the focus and the will to do it.
In the notes that you sent me, you said something pretty interesting, which is five things to make sure you do in reverse order.
Right.
I don't want to just read the list. We'll go through them together. But why in reverse order?
Because the top two, and I had to cheat just a little bit, are essentially, you know, your top five things. You start from five, you count to one. One of the companies that I work with and I'm involved with is a company called Board Cyber, and we have spent several years now quantifying risk. If I put this in place, how much does it decrease my risk? And we have some really specific answers for, you know, if I want to take 95% of the risk out of my life, what do I need to do? And so we start at five and we just count down from there. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. We've already mentioned number five, which was put yourself on a data diet. What's the next one?
So the next one is monitor your environment. Everybody has always been looking for the silver bullet for this stuff, right? If I just spend this $69.99 on this machine, then I never have to worry about cybersecurity again. It doesn't work that way. Right. Anytime we're thinking about, you know, cybersecurity, we're talking about people, processes, and technology, and all three of those things have to work together. And so monitoring your environment is the people part of it. It doesn't mean you have to have somebody glued to a screen watching every single thing. But when you start looking at, I've been involved in resolving over 6,000 security incidents in the course of my career. And,
goodness.
And the one thing that's common against so many, against probably 5,500 of them, is the technology worked perfectly well and there was an alert, but there was either no human there to take action on the alert or to think about it. So it's got to be somebody's job to go in and say, why is this thing alerting and what do I need to do about it? And that's just a really critical part in this magical way of, you know, reducing your cybersecurity risk by tens of percent is having somebody to monitor your environment.
Just yesterday, an Egyptian IP was hitting my nonprofit Snapcast website and actually managed to lock the thing out.
And remember, an attack doesn't have to be they went in and snatched my data,
right?
An attack can be a denial of service. Right. Which is what that is.
Well, and in my case, I don't know if this is germane to our conversation. There was a couple of plugins that I installed on my website. It's a WordPress site. So it's not, you know, we're not talking really big rocket science here, but, you know, no custom coding on my part or anything like that. But one of those plugins did its job. It alerted me and I went and I took a look and I, you know, made some changes and blacklisted that IP and everything stopped.
Congratulations, you just became a security incident responder. Okay. if this doesn't work out for you, we have a gig for you. I'm telling you right now, because you just made my point for me.
Yeah.
That's what people don't do. They, that's probably nothing. That's probably, well, then suddenly their stuff doesn't work and they wonder why.
Right. Well, thank you. I may have to put that on my resume.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So put yourself on a data diet, monitor your environment. What's next?
So the advent of Azure and Amazon Web Services and all of these things, software as a service, those things have gone a long way towards solving some really specific security problems. But one thing I hear a lot from small to mid-sized businesses and especially nonprofits, we put all of our data in Office 365. We put all of our data in one of those things. They're doing the security. Read your information and read your customer agreement.
Right.
They're doing security on their side. They're not doing your security. And in fact, they explicitly say it's your job to do your security.
Huh, okay.
And very specifically in so many software as a service user agreements, they explicitly disavow any responsibility for the security beyond those things that they've explicitly stated.
Right.
And so the people that think I'm safe because I've put it over here, those guys are covering it. What they tend to find out is, and all of the, just about all of the software as a service folks have a breach at some point, and then their customers find out, oh, I'm not protected by anything. In fact, all I'm going to be able to recover is, you know, some credits on the service that just got broken into. That's the limit of what I can get. And that's a really frustrating, scary place to be because the organization that owns the data has the responsibility and particularly the financial responsibility for the disposition of that data.
Mm-hmm. So the remote environment may still be covered, but locally I still have to do my own thing.
Not just locally, but even in a cloud environment, the data that resides in that cloud environment, they count on them only doing maybe a quarter to a third of the security processes that need to be done to protect that data.
I see. Okay. All right. And I want to ask what that responsibility is. You know, if I'm protecting that data, what is it that I can do? Are we talking antivirus and anti-malware efforts, or am I off base here? Is antivirus and malware only local, or does that apply to server side as well?
So what I always look at is whenever I'm putting sensitive data into a cloud environment, I'm just not going to do it unless it's encrypted.
I see.
Right? Yeah. Because if somebody steals a bunch of encrypted data and they don't have the decryption keys, guess what? They stole a bunch of stuff that they can't do anything with, and my customers are still safe. On, you know, the local side, antivirus and endpoint magic with somebody to look at those alerts are almost magic. They really do cover a tremendous range of likely attacks and you know, sometimes very complex attacks and even sometimes behaviors that can't quite be classified as an attack, but they, you know, they're still bothering you. These things can take some action to really protect you. They're also becoming much, much smarter. All of these companies are putting a tremendous amount into artificial intelligence and leveraging massive amounts of data that they already gather to secure their clients. And so having that as a layer of protection is just an absolutely incredible piece of your security program.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be working in an office, though, my number one is really straightforward. Firewalls are truly magic.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to spend money somewhere, spend it on a firewall for your office. A properly configured firewall will cut your odds of an attack from almost 100%. If nothing is done, it cuts it by about 90% right off the bat.
No kidding.
Now, that's a properly configured firewall,
yeah.
Right? Doesn't do anything for your cloud environment, but if you're working behind it, it makes things a lot safer.
Right. And just to be clear, a firewall is a piece of hardware?
A piece of hardware and software that prevents unwanted traffic from reaching your environment. Your laptop undoubtedly has one. Your offices can have one. And they typically start in the 250 range for anything that's relatively competent.
Mm-hmm. And just because I'm a geek, can I turn my Raspberry Pi into a firewall?
You absolutely can. In fact, I'm protecting my whole house with a $57 Raspberry Pi and something called IP chains.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a great little firewall, because all I'm doing is preventing bad guys from getting inside my network and looking at all the strange IoT stuff and all of my little labs that I have running around in the house.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm going to have to dig mine out and do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The last thing on your list is sort of you put it down as 1A. What, and I think this is actually huge, but I'm not going to steal your thunder. What is 1A?
So there have been some great studies that have come out, and this is when I do public speaking. This is kind of how I couch it. If I'm working for a small company, and I have only $100 to spend on my cybersecurity program, right? What do I spend that money on to get the biggest bang for the buck, particularly in this times of COVID? And the answer is training people. There have been some studies that have come out, very reputable studies, that show the return on investment from properly training people around cybersecurity hygiene is around 512%. So for every dollar you spend, you get $5.12 back in value in protecting your environment. Okay. It is literally the most cost-effective thing you can do to protect your environment. Now, everybody has heard about ransomware and don't click there. It goes further than that, but all of those things combined will give you a relatively focused, useful information security program. And I don't think with all of these requirements that we've spent over $500 to $1,000 for most small organizations.
Wow. And now I see why that's sort of at the top of your list that you do in reverse order. All right. So to recap, 5, put yourself on a data diet. 4, monitor your environment. 3, clouds don't solve security problems. 2, antivirus and endpoint management are almost magic. 1, firewalls are truly magic. And then at the top of that list, get some cybersecurity training.
Yep. But it has to be interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been guilty of in the course of my career is I've delivered hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of completely boring and uninteresting cybersecurity training. Right. And I apologize publicly every chance I get to all of those people who I've stolen an hour of their life from for doing basically the PowerPoint dance.
Right, right.
It's got to be interesting and it's got to be useful.
So if I'm an executive director of a nonprofit and I think I have data, or I think I have vulnerabilities that I want to solve, how do I go about doing that? How do I build an effective cybersecurity program for my organization?
There's a couple things that are just must have for every cybersecurity organization. Having worked in very large companies and mid-sized and even smaller companies, these things hold true across the environment. 1, people have to work together. There is no such thing, not at a big bank, not in the federal government, not at a nonprofit with 3 people, right? Where somebody's in charge of cybersecurity and they do everything. Because the weakest link of cybersecurity, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, is all about the training. And so if people are trained, everybody has to have that responsibility. And so people working together to solve that problem is just a critical piece of it. And one of the things that the cybersecurity industry is doing today is moving well beyond that chief information security officer that sits like a god on Mount Olympus and says, thou shalt have a 12-character password with upper lowercase, and we're going to change it every 30 days, and we're going to generate hundreds of calls to the help desk because nobody can remember their password ever.
Right?
Those days are over. And if your chief information security officer is doing that, you need to have a conversation with them, because all that's done is alienate people. So they're like, security is such a pain. I can't ever remember my password, and it's all that guy's fault.
Right.
It takes everybody pulling together to make this work.
I know a couple of fintech organizations that should probably talk to you.
It's, technology is an amazing thing today, right? And we're entering a world where, there are organizations now that are able to do away with passwords because there are better authentication mechanisms. There's a lot of stuff out there, But one of the biggest advances that we're seeing in terms of cybersecurity are those soft skills. How do I do true and effective change management across sometimes really large populations? People have to do something and really start to pull this together, because there are now some training organizations that, in addition to providing interesting training to folks, they're also starting to provide incentives for people to do the right thing. And the early returns on those sorts of programs are just fantastic, because it keeps security top of mind. But it's not that we will punish you, we will break you if you don't have the password according to whatever, you know, standard we've set. So it really works well.
Okay. So people working together.
The next one is you're going to have security incidents, right? A security incident is defined as the potential that you potentially have a problem, a security problem, right? That's a definition of a security incident. Doesn't mean you've lost data. It just means that you might have a problem. And so when you have a problem, the worst thing in the world you can do is say, Mickey, you clicked on the wrong thing and you infected everybody, right? That doesn't work, right? Because then people don't want to talk to you. People don't want to work with you. You just, because time is so sensitive and precious at that moment, you need everybody working together, right? Yeah. So unless there's just an obvious, you know, somebody took a whole bunch of data and they were selling it and you caught them, or the police called or whatever, unless it's like an obvious thing like that, hey, we have a problem, we need to work together, here's what's going on, and don't point fingers, because it just isn't useful at that particular moment in time.
Right. Unless it's malicious, it's probably not even somebody's fault.
Right. Right. It's, yeah. Look, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've worked in all sorts of very highly sensitive environments, and I have to own up that I've been caught by three different phishing attempts, right? One of which, you know, was pretty stupid. I looked at it and I went, this makes sense in the context of my world. I'm going to click here. Up, there goes my machine, right? Oh, and man. So yeah. If you live a cyber life, those things will happen to you, right? But people pointing fingers, at least I knew how to fix it myself and pretend like it never happened. But most people need help once they're there, and you want them to ask for help. That is so important and critical. The next thing that is really interesting kind of goes back to the original point of understanding why organizations get hacked, right? When you're thinking about the nonprofit world, we're living in a very polarized environment politically. So some nonprofits face a lot greater risk just from activists trying to deny service or prevent them from being able to do anything. You also have the financial reasons of people just trying to break in to steal data. And then you have people that just like to break things, right? And I'm generalizing a little bit broadly here, but you really, when you're thinking about your nonprofit, if you're involved with women's reproductive rights, you have a different risk portfolio than if you're involved in food distribution in the third world, right? And so you have to think about that, and that really has to impact how much you spend and what you do from a technology standpoint.
Yeah, that's true. So who you are does make a difference, even if there's simply a lot of opportunistic hacking going on out there.
Yep. What your public face is and how you do those things, those are all absolutely critical things to think about as you're getting involved with you know, going online and collecting stuff online, right? Yeah. And then the final thing, and in every job, I finally got smart about 15 years ago. For every job that I take, either as an employee or a consultant, the one question I have beyond the standard interview process and business capture stuff is, I want to look the CEO in their eyes and ask them why they care about cybersecurity. Because if they aren't, and the executive team aren't, and the leadership team aren't, and the people aren't committed to building a program, it doesn't matter how much money they have, what they need, what they want, or what they think they're trying to accomplish, it just isn't going to succeed. If they feel overwhelmed and they don't know what to do, that's something we can fix. But if they really don't want it or don't want to try to do it, that commitment is so important, because that commitment is literally the first step on getting better in this space.
Right. But, you know, to underline something that we've been saying all along, that sure, it has to be a commitment, but it doesn't have to be a daunting task. It doesn't have to be an overwhelming part of one's day.
One of the things that we're doing with our managed security business today, and not to put too much of a plug in, is we're turning information security programs into a utility bill, right? The state of the art, not just for us, but for several companies like us, is to be able to look at your risks and say, you need these three things, these five things, these seven things, whatever that number is. We're going to do everything for you. We're going to do all the monitoring. We're going to provide all the tools. We're going to do all the people, process, and technology stuff. You pay one bill a month, and it's our problem if something goes wrong. It literally is that simple. So, but you have to have that commitment to, because you remember, we've been talking about people are so important. And so it's not just putting that stuff in and putting stuff on laptops and everything else. You got to have the people commitment to really make the program a success. And that's where, you know, the organization's leadership comes in.
Right. Peter, I love this. This has been a thoroughly enjoyable conversation, but I'm afraid we must wrap. If a listener wanted to ask you any questions and get in touch with you, how would you suggest they do that?
They can reach me at Pete@cyberops.com. And we're happy to answer any questions. For nonprofits, we work with several at this point, along with municipalities. And we work very hard to understand that sometimes they are resource constrained. And so our focus, we're always willing to answer questions and provide support. We just figure it out as we go along with each case being individual. Okay, but Mickey, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, Pete. This has been good.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.